HighBridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Jewish Priorities, 65 Proposals for the Future of Our People, edited by David Hazzoni, read by Barry Abrams. When they confront their own people, to whose happiness, continuity, and perfection they feel committed in all the depths of their being, and find it splintered, broken into parties and parties, they cannot identify themselves with any particular party. They desire to unite themselves with the whole people, only with the all-embracing whole, in all its fullness and good. Abraham Isaac Cook, Lights of Holiness. Introduction. A New Torah for Our Time. David Hazzoni. What is a Jewish priority? Who gets to say? How do we agree on what our priorities should be? What does it even mean to ask this question? In the essays that follow, each contributor was asked a simple question. If you could stand before the Jewish people and advocate for a single priority for our collective future, what would it be? When Adam Bello, publisher of Wicked Son Books, first raised the idea of this volume, an immediate question arose. How do we keep it from becoming a collection of boring, conventional arguments about things most Jews already agree on, like fighting anti-Semitism or remembering the Holocaust? In order to be worth the effort, we agreed, such a book would need to be filled with new ideas, provocative and timely, controversial and creative. Ideas that spark debate and turn our focus to hard questions, while also being, on some level, intellectually entertaining. A tall order, indeed. We also agreed that these ideas would have to come not from the triangulating communications departments of our hoary communal institutions, but from thinkers, activists, scholars, rabbis, influencers, and culture makers, people who live and breathe the contemporary Jewish experience in all its many forms and who have something important to say. For generations, the Jewish agenda has been set in a top-down manner. In the diaspora, institutional leaders and major philanthropists work together to establish our communal priorities, not just on the basis of what is truly needed, but also, even primarily, on the basis of what can be funded. That might have been necessary a generation or two ago, but in today's decentralized, sophisticated, and technologically empowered Jewish world, it is not a good way to engage our best minds in a process that challenges our assumptions and moves us forward as a people. What we really need, and perhaps have needed for a long time, is a good old-fashioned intellectual food fight, a democratized Jewish free-for-all, a spirited brawl between two covers. We therefore set out with the singular goal of gathering and putting on display a collection of new ideas for a new generation of Jews. Our aim is to start not one, not two, but many Jewish arguments, and our hope is that these arguments will percolate and spread, stimulating new initiatives and sparking a sense of fresh possibility at the dawn of a new phase of Jewish life. Over the course of more than a year, we reached out to potential contributors from every quadrant, from left to right, from secular and reform to Haredi, from Gen Z to our most venerated writers. Our contributors are Israelis and Americans, Europeans and Russian speakers. They are literary, rabbinic, scholarly, and communal figures, journalists and online influencers, and activists. Many, it turned out, were bursting with ideas and eager to be heard. The essays we received are as eclectic as their authors. Some offer new answers to old but still important questions: the proper approach to God, Torah study, and Jewish education, the structure and role of our communal institutions, the importance of the Hebrew language in the future of diaspora life, the need for a renewed sense of Jewish pride in facing the rise of anti-Semitism, or giving voice to marginalized Jewish communities. Others raise entirely new themes, the role of new media in teaching ancient texts, or calls for the creation of Jewish fantasy literature, or a new Jewish pantheon to honor the heroes of our people. Yet despite this variety, some surprising common threads have emerged, enough to be woven together into a collective Jewish fabric that is stronger than we may have previously supposed. Three themes in particular stand out. First is a belief in the necessity of the conversation itself. Ours is a time of heated mutual exclusion and intensifying polarization, and few feel this as acutely as the Jews. One might even say we invented cancel culture centuries ago through the process of herem, or excommunication, when disputes over doctrine or practice became unbridgeable. Today, everyone seems compelled not just to keep score about various affronts, but to keep a running list of people I will never retweet. Yet our contributors have set all that aside. Despite their disagreements, they have chosen to appear together in one volume, accepting the underlying premise that such a pan-Jewish conversation is not only possible, but urgently needed. For many of them, this is also an act of courage. Second is the recognition of the State of Israel as a central reference point for Jewish life today. 75 years after the founding of the first Jewish state in 2 millennia, a new form of Jewish identity has emerged in the land of Israel. Many of our contributors are either Israeli-born or have chosen to make Israel their home. Many others have chosen to focus on a topic related to the Jewish state, either supportively or critically. For this reason, several offer contributions that call for an improved Israel, whether that means overhauling its overtly Jewish or Ashkenazic character, its fidelity to modern liberalism, or its relationship with the diaspora or the land itself. Some see Israel as an embattled homeland that must be protected at all costs. Others fear that the new centrality of Israel may have come at the expense of a robust, independent affirmation of Jewish life in the diaspora. Yet for all the controversy that the Jewish state engenders, there can be no doubt that this book appears deep into what the political scientist Yossi Shane has called the Israeli century, a time when Jews everywhere have crafted a new identity that is centrally informed by the renewal of Jewish sovereign life in our ancestral homeland. A third common thread is something we may call a proper sense of Jewish pride. More than 70 years after the Holocaust and independence, a great many Jews still feel we are missing something, some spiritual quality that is hard to define yet deeply necessary for our survival as a people. We could have gone on commissioning essays indefinitely. The resulting volume could easily have been twice as long, and we regret that the constraints of time and space required us finally to say, enough. But we are very pleased and proud of the result. Taken as a whole, this singular collection provides a kind of still life of the state of the Jews in our time, along with a catalog of the fears, dreams, and plans of a people at a particular moment in history. Indeed, my own belief is that this work constitutes an important contribution to what we may call a new Torah for a new generation of Jews. The word Torah, or teaching, has always had a double meaning. There was the Torah, representing the 5 books of Moses, considered by tradition to be divinely dictated. And then there was simply Torah, which embraced the entirety of Jewish teaching, from pithy proverbs to urgent polemics, from legalistic haggling and interpretation of dreams to medical advice, philosophy, and mystical legends, from prophecy to poetry and prayer. When the Torah was given on Mount Sinai, we are told, all the Israelites had crowns placed on their heads, symbolizing both the responsibility and the honor of the sovereign individual's pursuit of consequential wisdom. This has been our mission as a people for thousands of years, and it has always been a creative process, one that proceeded largely through books. Books define us like no other people on earth. The Bible, a limited collection of texts, each written at a certain place and time, trained us in the arts of high-leverage narratives about our past, but also of poetry, wisdom, and law. The Talmud, through tens of thousands of memorized tales, dialogues, legal disputes, medical and business advice, and mystical imaginings into a pulsating food processor that has nurtured the imagination of Jews for millennia. Later still, we expressed ourselves through codes of law, mystical texts, theological and philosophical treatises, and in the modern era, through novels and screenplays, magazines and newspapers, manifestos and op-eds. And today it continues through YouTube and Substack, podcasts and tweets. All of these are in their own way holy texts. They are holy even if we deny there is such a thing as holiness. They are holy even when their subject matter is utterly secular in nature. They are holy because they are the building blocks of our collective wisdom, our Torah, which is part of our core mission on earth. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the leader of the Jews during the Great Revolt, who salvaged our Torah from the ashes of Roman destruction in the first century CE, was said to have mastered every form of wisdom, including constellations and calculations, the sayings of launderers and the sayings of foxkeepers, the conversation of demons and the conversation of palm trees, the conversation of the ministering angels, the great things and the little things. Bava Batra, 134a. Ben Zakkai was the last political leader of a sovereign Jewish country prior to the Zionist Revolution of 1948. Torah was, in his time, our wisdom of life, the universe, and everything, and expressed a sense that all of life is interconnected and bound by the Jewish quest for wisdom and goodness, and it necessarily included the vast multiplicity of opinions, contradictory narratives, and sharp disagreements that any authentic quest requires. In our own era, when Jewish life once again embraces the entirety of the human experience, our wisdom has expanded to include politics and policy, science, literature and the arts, the sayings of cab drivers, and the sayings of tank commanders. Our collective wisdom today is as broad as the disciplines we have mastered, or in many cases pioneered, and as deep as our most profound religious, spiritual, or humanistic thinking. The essays in this collection represent, I would modestly suggest, an important part of this new Torah. Not to replace the old by any means, but to add another layer for a people that has carried its ancient instincts into our time. For it is not simply 65 opinions, it is a demonstration that despite our differences, we remain one people, bound through history and into the future by our timeless quest for wisdom. Every book is necessarily finite, but my hope is that you will not experience this as a finished work. Rather, it is just the beginning of what should be an ongoing conversation, a demonstration that Jewish priorities can be advocated, explored, rebutted, and defended in the broadest possible context, that of the Jewish people as a whole. Each essay can be listened to in one sitting. They are organized alphabetically by author's last name to avoid making invidious choices. They can be listened to in order, randomly, or even in reverse. Some will inspire new thoughts or offer just the right words to express something you have long held on the tip of your tongue. But I encourage every one of us to pay closest attention to those we disagree with. For it is only we as listeners who can turn this collective exercise into a genuine clash of ideas and thereby set a course for a stronger, richer, prouder, and more inspiring future for our people. 1. Toward a Green Zionism, Rediscovering Herzl's Environmentalist Vision. Yosef Israel Abramowitz. In 1896, as Theodor Herzl was writing his Zionist manifesto, The Jewish State, Svante Arrhenius, a scientist in Sweden, was calculating the effects of the doubling of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere by humans burning coal, gas, and oil, which he warned could increase the Earth's temperature by a disastrous 5 to 6 degrees Celsius. Both Herzl and Arrhenius predicted correctly the course of human events. While we don't know if Herzl was familiar with Arrhenius's work, Herzl's vision for the future state of the Jewish people was amazingly designed as a corrective to the climate injustice in his day, and he planned for his future state to be carbon neutral and free of smoke pollution. In other words, back in 1896, Arrhenius issued the first warning against human-created catastrophic climate change, just as Herzl was planting the seeds of his model country that was going to be a renewable light unto the nations and solve the looming climate crisis. Arrhenius went on to win the Nobel Prize in Chemistry. Herzl created a state-building movement and was buried on the aptly named Mount Herzl in Jerusalem, overlooking Israel's grave climate record. Herzl gave us two blueprints of his future state. The first, the Jewish state, 1896, is a call to action to form a progressive society on the Eastern Mediterranean. The second, Altneuland, 1902, the novel he raced to write as his breath shortened and his heart murmured, recounts the experiences of two passengers on the coal-fired boat Futuro who visit the Holy Land twice, 20 years apart, marveling at what the Jewish people were able to accomplish in a generation. At the heart of Herzl's hope for the future were humanistic values with a Jewish flavor and the promise of technology, for which his imagination was astonishingly prescient. As he tired of long train rides in Europe, he looked out the window of his carriage and imagined the future airplane, penning the play The Steerable Airship. Well before radio, Herzl imagined a newspaper phone that would ring news and music into people's homes. He had the uncanny ability to take a prototype of an idea, ideological or technological, and to quickly extrapolate to full-scale implementation into the future. And he used Altneuland as his platform to help the Jewish public imagine what they could and mostly did will into being. But Herzl's vision is much greener than today's reality in Israel. In Herzl's imagination over 120 years ago, the future state would be a technological wonderland. Electric and telephone lines would exist in every home. Fast electric trains would crisscross the country and even the region. Electric boats would skim the Sea of Galilee. Electric farming equipment would power the agricultural collectives, and electric cable cars would whirl above city streets to avoid creating traffic jams below. The land would be filled with electric cars, provided there are enough recharging stations in the area one drives in, he wrote, all managed by cooperatives of drivers, over a century before Shai Agassiz introduced the same concept via Israel's Better Place venture. And Herzl shared the astounding vision that the future state would be 100% carbon neutral in its power production, replacing the need for burning polluting fossil fuels. The Zionist movement, including the tree-planting arm of the Jewish National Fund created by Herzl, began as a green movement. And while Zionism today is threatened from within by parochial and extreme voices in the political sphere, from without by Iran and also an international delegitimization movement, the National Security Council and the Prime Minister's office has recently added a new threat to the viability of Herzl's state: climate change. Indeed, as Shira Efron of the Institute for National Security Studies at Tel Aviv University writes in a devastating report, the Middle East is one of the regions most vulnerable to climate change, including rising temperatures, water and subsequently food shortages, rising sea levels, and increased frequency and intensity of extreme weather events. These changes could aggravate regional instability, lead to mass migration of refugees, and create comfortable conditions for terrorist organizations. Climate change also has direct implications for infrastructure, equipment, and defense and weapons systems, as well as the health and level of preparedness of military and security personnel. Ahad Ha'am famously criticized Herzl's state-fixated Zionism in an essay called This Is Not the Way, While Herzl won the battle within the Zionist movement, Ahad Ha'am's essay is true for Israel's backward climate policies. About 116 years after Herzl published his fictionalized vision of Israel in Altneuland, Elon Musk met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. "You know," Musk said, "your entire country could be powered by solar power. The Negev is Israel's energy future. You can deploy solar systems here that will give you more energy than you need, clean energy. Israel is a technological superpower." Herzl would be disappointed to learn that the Israel of today has deliberately ignored his green energy vision and embraced the polluting and expensive gas monopoly controlled by the barons of our day, planting the seeds of Israel's and the world's destruction rather than redemption. Indeed, while Eilat and the Arava are 100% powered by the sun during the day and soon also at night, the rest of Israel is powered 90% by fossil fuels. This dark monopoly will control and exploit Israel's energy policy for at least another generation, with the state investing more and more tax dollars in gas pipelines and licenses rather than a solar plus energy storage infrastructure. The result is that as the United States and Europe are advancing toward ambitious green goals that will also nurture their future economies with sustainable jobs, Israel is at the bottom of green energy lists in the OECD countries rather than its leader, which Herzl would have wanted. Cruising on the Futuro from the poor and underdeveloped Turkish-controlled Palestine through the Red Sea in the pages of Altneuland, Mr. Kingscourt says to Friedrich, his Jewish companion, "With the ideas, knowledge, and facilities that humanity possesses on this 31st day of December 1902, it could save itself. No philosopher's stone, no dirigible airship is needed. Everything needful for the making of a better world exists already. And do you know, man, who could show the way? You. You Jews, just because you're so badly off, you've nothing to lose. You could make the experimental land for humanity." Kingscourt and Friedrich return to Haifa 20 years later and discover a bountiful, well-planned, smog-free, green country. In the middle of the square was a fenced-in garden of palm trees. Both sides of the streets running into the square were also bordered with palms, which seemed to be common in this region. The rows of trees served a double purpose. They gave shade by day, and at night shed light from electric lamps which hung from them like enormous glass fruits. Herzl describes the city in which automobiles speeded noiselessly by on rubber tires, and he directs Kingscourt in the text to ask, "What's that?" He pointed to a large iron car running along the tops of the palms, whose passengers were looking down into the street. The wheels of the car were not underneath, but on its roof. It moved along a powerful iron rail, an electric overhead train. The tour de force of Israel's green energy development, in Herzl's vision, is the Dead Sea Canal, taking advantage of the drop from the Mediterranean down to the Dead Sea. Take note that Albert Einstein received the Nobel Prize in Physics for the photovoltaic effect, the basis of our solar power, only in 1921, so Herzl's green vision didn't include solar power. And now they were in front of the power station. While driving down from Jericho, they had not been able to get a full view of the Dead Sea. Now they saw it lying broad and blue in the sun, so smaller than the Lake of Geneva. On the northern shore, near where they stood, was a narrow, pointed strip of land extending behind the rocks, over which the waters of the canal came thundering down. Below were, in fact, as far as the eye could reach around the shore, numerous large manufacturing plants. The water power at source had attracted many industries. The canal had stirred the Dead Sea to life. The iron tubes through which the waters of the canal beat down upon the turbine wheels reminded Kingscourt of the apparatus at Niagara. There were some 20 of these mighty iron tubes at the Dead Sea, jutting out from the rocks at equal distances. They were set vertically upon the turbine sheds, resembling fantastic chimneys. The roaring from the tubes and the white foam on the outflowing waters bore witness to a might work. From here, the tamed natural forces were conducted into electric generators, and the current sent along wires throughout all parts of the country. The old new land had been fructified into a garden and a home for the people who had once been poor, weak, hopeless, and homeless. I remember when Prime Minister Menachem Begin unsuccessfully tried to revive Herzl's Dead Sea Canal. While water remains scarce, Israel is blessed with enough sun to power the whole country day and night, a Niagara of sunshine. Herzl was obsessed not only with the Jewish question, but the social question, the growing inequalities in society. 2 years before writing The Jewish State, he penned a play called The New Ghetto. The main character, Jacob Samuel, an educated, assimilated Jew, organizes a coal miner strike against the exploitative, stock market-fixing aristocracy and is killed off in a duel. The exploitation of coal workers is at the heart of the new ghetto, and the flag that draped Herzl's coffin had 2 blue stripes and 7 Jewish stars, to signify not the days of the week, but the humane treatment of workers that could be achieved by a 7-hour workday, which the Jewish state was going to model for the world, along with green energy. In Herzl's future state, there would be peace with our neighbors and full equality for its Arab citizens. He was moved by the Arab poor on his brief visit to Palestine and held that their lives would be vastly improved by the new technology, including green electricity for all, that the Jews would bring with them. Fast forward 120 years since the publication of Altneuland. My 18-year-old daughter Ashira and I jump into a taxi in our third attempt to vandalize Herzl's grave in Jerusalem. Herzl's bones, much like those of Joseph, arrived in Israel long after his death. He was buried in the State of Israel in 1949, 52 years after the first Zionist Congress. In my bag is the masking tape to paste a Reuters article onto the slab of black granite grave engraved with gold block Hebrew letters. In the taxi, I hear a ping on my newspaper phone. There is a shouting match in the Knesset. We click on the link of Kan, the national broadcaster, to see and hear members of Knesset, mostly from the opposition, yelling. In the seat of the speaker's chair is Mansour Abbas, chairman of the Islamic party, Ra'am. A portrait of Herzl hangs above him on the left. Despite the fact that Herzl imagined a civil political culture, Israel's politics have been intense and often unpleasant in the past several years, with 4 rounds of inconclusive elections. The political elephant in the room for the past several decades has been if, when, and how Israeli Arab parties might join a Zionist government and change the political map. The Israeli Arab sector has been deeply neglected, with vast discrepancies in government policies and spending on education, public transportation, police, infrastructure, and electricity. The electric light was certainly not invented so that the drawing room of a few snobs might be illuminated, but rather to enable us to solve some of the problems of humanity by its light, wrote Herzl in The Jewish State. In solving it, we are working not only for ourselves, but also for the many other downtrodden and oppressed beings. From his perch in the Knesset above Mansour Abbas, Herzl watches the debate taking place about hooking up unauthorized Arab homes to electricity. We jump out of the taxi at Mount Herzl, walk past the modest museum, and emerge into the open plaza. On my phone, Abbas is still trying to get the Knesset to order, but he is calm. The black granite tomb about 100 yards away is flanked by soldiers and 2 flagpoles, the World Zionist Organization flag on the right and the flag of Israel on the left. The soldiers, on a study tour, move on, and so Ashira and I approach and place the phone with the live Knesset debate onto the grave. From atop the tomb, Mansour Abbas's voice calls for a roll call on the third.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?